scores!
Ruiz slides! Rollins has won it! They stream out of the dugout! Yeah. Rollins by near third! This game is over!
Second deck walk-off home run! Grand slam, Bryce Harper!
That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode 529. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, some fun stuff to get to here on this episode of the podcast. The Phillies make a signing, a big signing, on the international market. But the Phillies actually do something pretty cool. They sign the number four prospect on the international market, according to MLB.com. Baseball America has this kid at number eight, but it's a significant signing, and so he won't be in the big leagues for a while, but we'll talk about him and what these international signings mean, how important they are to a team's success long-term and building up a farm system. We're going to talk a little bit about the Japanese outfielder Seiya Suzuki. Do the Phillies have any kind of a chance of signing this guy? Are they even interested? We'll talk about that a little bit. One of the things that kind of blew up my Twitter timeline this week was somebody envisioned a new alternate uniform for the Phillies with an all-blue and a blue helmet, which I just thought looked awesome. And it ended up getting like 1,500 likes, which is unusual for me. I don't usually get that many people liking something that I retweet or comment on. So we'll talk about that a little bit. Plus, The Athletic did an outstanding Phillies survey. And we're going to read some of the questions from the Athletic's fan survey, and we'll give you our thoughts on some of those questions as well. So a lot to get to here on this episode of the podcast. Joining me, as they do every week, are my good friends Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Justin, of course, you know from Baseball Prospectus, The Dirty Inning, Continued Success, and of course, Absolutely Hammered, the podcast he does with Chris Jones on our Patreon. Follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, I saw during the Cowboys 49ers game that somebody requisitioned your old Joe Buck tweet. And I didn't know if you saw that or not. Did you catch that?
I did. I got enough. I got to know. And actually, the guy himself replied tagging me, so you know, yeah. It's not like I go after people for
it's
that.
Like just, Twitter residuals, you know what I mean? You
yeah,
got like Twitter residuals.
Well, it's
like,
interesting.
It's a meme now because that's just a format that everyone uses for things. It's brilliant.
Yeah,
I forget about it. I don't have a lot like that. I've had a couple take off, but like that one obviously just exploded. And yeah, you're right. That it just I see more. It's more of a reminder of how often people do that. And like I have no idea that it's happening. It's strange. Every time I'm like, oh, that's mine. That's me. That's so funny.
Neat.
And I get very scared that is going to be my legacy, and my sole contribution on that big a scale to humanity. And yeah, that's a huge bummer. But anyway, yeah, it's always very funny to see people repurpose it.
Listen, as we have seen, especially over these last 6 or 7 years, last decade or so, there are lots worse ways to make a legacy here in this world. Trust me.
That's true.
Very true.
That ain't bad. If you bring a little laughter into the world, that ain't a bad thing. Liz Rocher, of course, from Yahoo Sports is joining us as well, and Continued Success. Follow her on Twitter, at Liz Rocher. Hi, Liz. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Enjoying the end of Super Wild Card Weekend. Weekend.
Yeah, Monday night football wild card weekend. Not great. I don't get the Monday night game.
They want to spread it out and get as many eyes on football as you can. You know.
It's bad though. It's bad because now somebody's going to play on a short week next week.
Eh. They're in the playoffs. I don't care.
Nobody you guys care about.
Yeah, I was going to say, right. I don't care. Justin, you and your Packers, you still have an iron in the fire. We are long gone.
Oh, yeah.
And really should have been long gone since before they made the playoffs. There's no way they were going to win that game.
No.
Only 0 for 5 at this point in Packers playing in the postseason now. So, yeah, we're not 0 for 5. 0 for their last 5, I think, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very fun, cool stat. So when people are like, oh, you're excited for the game? No, it's pretty normal. let's see what happens next first.
There's an interesting Packers stat. I was thinking about Aaron Rodgers, and I mentioned this on the Eye on the Enemy podcast I do for Bleeding Green Nation. And we think of Aaron Rodgers. He's obviously a Hall of Famer. He's probably the best pure quarterback in the NFL. Tom Brady, of course, is the best football player we've ever seen, but whatever. Aaron Rodgers is a phenomenal talent. It's been 11 years since he was last in the Super Bowl. He has found a way to lose in the NFC playoffs in so many different ways over the last decade plus. He's lost in the NFC Championship game four times during that stretch, and then lost in the divisional round three times during that stretch. So it's funny when we think about Aaron Rodgers and that he's only been to one Super Bowl, and it was after the 2010 season. That's how long ago it was. It's crazy that it's been that long that a guy that good on so many good Packers teams would have fallen short so many times all these years.
Yeah, it's such a shame.
I think what we what we've recently learned or been reminded about Aaron Rodgers can tell us that no matter if the Packers lose in that game, it's not going to be Aaron Rodgers' fault, according to
Correct.
Aaron Rodgers.
Correct. Yeah. It'll be someone other than Aaron Rodgers, for sure, for sure.
I would like to say that watching the Cowboys lose was absolutely it was so fun. It made everything better. They have a really long playoff drought, and it's wonderful.
They haven't been in an NFC conference game since 1995. It's just a beautiful thing. Well, anyway, this is a baseball podcast, so we like to dip into the football world because I know that's something Liz and I cover a little bit. But let's talk about the Phils, and they actually made a pretty interesting signing this week. And I think this signing actually probably took place many months ago, the way these international signings work. This used to happen on July 2nd. That used to be the date that international signings went down, but now they've moved it to the middle of the winter, which I think is actually really helpful this year since there's nothing else going on right now. But with the international signing period, you're looking at mostly young players, very young players, teenagers from the Dominican Republic, from Venezuela, Latin America, and from other countries as well. And the Phillies were one of the more active teams, as they typically are in signing some of these guys. It was kind of linked that the Phillies were going to be connected to this Venezuelan shortstop named William Bergola Jr., who MLB.com had rated as the number 4 international prospect. Baseball America has him as the number 8 best international prospect. They signed him for $2.2 million this week. He's not, I didn't see what, how old he was in this particular, with this sign. I mean, a lot of these kids are 16, 17 years old. So, oh, he's 17. That's where it is. I'm sorry. I was looking right at it. Bergola is 17 years old. So he's a young kid. So it's basically like you're getting somebody who's just entering his senior year of high school. But they say his offense and defense are both above average, really good instincts and baseball IQ. His father was a former middle infielder who played for the Cincinnati Reds in 2005. And $2.2 million is a nice chunk of change. The last time they paid somebody this much money was when they paid Jalen Ortiz $4 million. And Ortiz is slowly starting to make his way up the farm system. I think he's still a limited player, it seems like, but he's got massive power, and you can kind of dream on him a little bit if he ever starts to put it all together. This kid seems like he's got a lot of talent, but he's still so far away. He's multiple years away from joining the big league club. But these are the kinds of deals, Justin, that they don't pay off right away. This is not something that you're looking to help the 2022 club, 23, or even really the 2024 or 25 clubs. I mean, you're talking 5 years down the line with a player like this, but you got to hit on some of these, especially some. I'm happy to see the Phillies go out and spend big on one of these super duper young players, because their philosophy has traditionally been, with the exception of a guy like Jalen Ortiz, to spread the money around and buy as many lottery tickets as they can, which they certainly did as well. But what are your thoughts on the signing?
Yeah, I think, as you mentioned, the Phillies have been aggressive here before, but because of the lack of hits, I think there's the assumption out there that they are not actually, in fact, super active on the international circuit. And it is good to see them take a guy highly ranked by two different outlets, though. I think 4 and 8, there is an interesting amount of disparity there, showing again that at this point, when you sign these guys, these kids, that you're not really signing a ball player. You're signing kind of the broad idea of a ball player. I think you'll notice that, like, a lot of these guys are classified as an outfielder or a shortstop. And in this level, shortstop kind of means infielder, because the Phillies have signed yesterday they signed two more teenagers, one from Australia and one from Germany, I think Jim Salisbury reported. But before that, when I checked the list, they had signed 13 international signings, and 7 of them had been shortstops. So clearly, either that's an area where the Phillies are trying to fortify themselves, but also, like I said, I'm not sure all these guys stay shortstops. Even Bryson Stott, who is not an international draftee, but you know, a young shortstop in there, he might not even be a shortstop in you know, who knows, in a year or two's time. So I think when you're getting those 16, 17-year-olds, that's something to keep in mind as well, is that a lot's going to change over the next few years. Most of the scouting on Bregoia is like what you said, John. Everyone loved mentioning that his father played for the Reds, but that's more to the same argument, that there's not a whole lot to say other than what Baseball America wrote, which was that he has a sound swing, he makes frequent contact in games with a line drive approach and gap power, instinctive player, projects a stick in the middle infield, plus speed and an arm that earns, you know, he hits like 50-55 on a scale that goes 20 to 80. So, you know, not bad. And MLB.com was even like, his baseball IQ is good. So, like, these oft-cited scouting cliches are everywhere. But, like, at this point, with these descriptions, they always kind of almost sound like a perfect player. So it's easy to like, oh, yeah, we got the guy. But, again, there's just a lot of time between now and when we see them on the Phillies. So it's funny that in this system, the way the international drafting works, teams that have less to spend because of how much they've spent in MLB free agency have to be more strategic, like how the Dodgers couldn't sign many people because they signed Trevor Bauer. Like that took them off the board for the international draft. But I also like the Brewers approach, which is to just sign a plane full of guys in each international signing period. Every outfielder, it feels like, is, like I said, like they just go for all these guys. And something else of note, I mean, the Nationals have Juan Soto's brother in their system now, but thank God Ronald Acuna's brother was also available.
I know.
And did not go to the Braves. I think the Twins got him. So something I was just reading, just catching up the other day, like when you think about the Philly system, I know how we all feel about it. And again, all these guys from the international draft are entering at the bottom as teenagers. But something to note, I just feel like when you look at like what are the strengths of this system that we so often associate with weaknesses, the Philly system does have catching depth. And it does have starting pitching at the top in that, you know, Mick Abel's up there, Andrew Painter's up there, and now Hans Kraus is even up there in the top 10. And the organization, like, loves these guys. And, you know, Abel especially is viewed as this frontline starter. And him and Painter are both huge, massive guys, which I didn't realize. Like, you know, Andrew Painter is 6'7".
Yowza.
Wow.
That's massive.
They love tall pitchers, but goodness gracious.
Yeah, but one thing they're missing – one element that a lot of their young talent is missing is an impact bat, and like other guys who are at Mick Abel's level, because that's one of the scarcities for the Phillies, is that they have Mick Abel, but even guys like Andrew Painter aren't yet considered like guys on that level. Like, he is a guy prospect that is lauded across the board, but everyone else is kind of, you know, their top three is kind of like agreed upon, but everybody else is scattered to the wind. So it's important for the Phillies to, I think, you know, look in these areas and just, you know, we know what Dave Dombrowski's trying to do. He's trying to rebuild a system that's more noted for its dysfunction than its results at this point. So it's cool to see them feed into the system and bring in these young players, especially from countries like Australia and Germany, where, you know, you don't necessarily associate a lot of baseball playing. But yeah, I just it's cool to see them go out and be aggressive. It's cool to see them get a guy that one platform considers the number four prospect, and it's cool to see them trying to address the absences that their own system has. You know, it's not gonna pay off great. They're still gonna have a pretty like muddled farm system, I think, for the, you know, next year, maybe next couple of years. But it's nice to see with all the new people like in place, with Preston Mattingly hiring and new farm system employees coming into play and getting new players, like just to hopefully breathe life into the idea that this system is on its way back from a low point. You know, is it? We don't know, but hopefully this is the beginning.
Right. And Liz, if they're going to get anything out of these international signings, and a guy like Bregoia and a guy like Jalen Ortiz, as we've been talking about, the farm system needs the revamping that's going on right now that Justin was talking about. It needs to bear some fruit, because, you know, you think about that. Some of the top stars in baseball right now were guys taken in the same way. Fernando Tatis Jr. was signed by the White Sox in 2015 for $700,000. He was, you have Juan Soto, you mentioned Ronald Acuna, Ozzie Albies, all these different guys. There are so many of, basically most of the international stars in Major League Baseball were signed through this process, and those teams develop those players and they become their superstars. It's almost more common to get a superstar that way than it is to draft one through the amateur draft. And so the Phillies kind of have to start getting their farm system right in order for a guy like Bregoia to come up through the system and really succeed. But it's important that the Phillies marry these two things, because this is how you supplement, you know, this is how you avoid having a top heavy roster, to be able to bring these guys up and have that wealth of talent to build up the farm system. So I don't know. What did you think of, what do you think of their signing and the way they're kind of going about the signing these international guys?
I had the same thoughts as you about, about how every team has this type of guy, and how they're not every team, but, and how the Phillies really need that. Mm-hmm. But I can't stop thinking that all rivers flow through the Phillies minor league system. It's so vital that they get things right. And considering how dysfunctional it was, I mean, it's hard to know how quickly it's going to be addressed. Hopefully not so slowly that it will actually affect him negatively. But I worry, because you wonder what talent that has tried to come up through has been tweaked in a bad way, you know, because of what's been going on. Because it's none of the players' fault. They're just doing what everyone is telling them to do. The problem is that everyone was telling them to do things. They're telling them all to do different things, and they had no idea who they were supposed to listen to. So
it's hard to
imagine, really. I don't want to imagine great talent going through there and just stalling out. So I'm very excited for this signing. I mean, the philosophy of signing a boatload of these players and hoping one works out, there have been worse philosophies. And that's, teams are so active in this market because it's relatively cheap. They have a limited pool, but it's incredibly cheap. And they want to limit all this and put it into a draft format because, you know, every team is angry at every other team for getting the player that they wanted or they didn't know about.
Well, that's going to happen with the draft too. So,
but at least everyone's limited. Like, I think they don't think that the money limit, you know, the pool.
I see.
Enough. I would also just like to make a comment about how inappropriate I feel it is for that some of the deals we've heard, and how young the players are.
Yeah, they're really young.
Both above the table and under the table commitments. It's really gross. Is essentially, you could think of it in a way as child trafficking, if you really wanted to. And I thought MLB was taking it seriously when they banned whoever it was. John Coppolella?
Was it Coppolella? Yeah.
From the Braves.
From the Braves. They banned him for life. And they just, and now it, I just don't think they care. They had to make a big show of it because I think the federal government got involved.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about these kids being 17 or 18 years old, and then every article you read about them is saying, you know, but teams have typically had agreements in place or have at least been scouting for 2 to 3 years before those agreements are formalized. So this is going on long before they're even 17 years old, which is, like you're saying,
13,
extremely young
14.
On its own.
Yeah, no, it's definitely kind of an ugly business, and I should get a guest on the midweek podcast at some point that can kind of go into that a little more in depth. But
you should have the prospect guys over at BP, Jarrett Seidler and Jeff Paternoster. They've talked about their disgust with this part of the industry for a long time. They would be perfect guests. I think you would love hearing what they have to say.
Well,
I've had Jeff on.
They are Mets fans.
I know. I've had Jeff on a number of times. Jeff's good people, even though he's a Mets fan. I've had him on a number of times. Well, I'll talk to Jeff about that. Maybe even try and get him on for this week, because that's good stuff there. So, all right. Well, let's move on. Let's talk about the Seiya Suzuki profile in The Athletic. 12 teams were mentioned as landing spots when they did an interview with him. Again, these are just kind of little whispers to real rumors from real baseball people. Suzuki is trying to hold his cards close to the vest. But I think one of the things that's become pretty clear, at least to me, is that the Phillies are not really in the mix here. They've never been in the mix for a Japanese import. And most teams aren't in the mix for these Japanese imports. They traditionally go to a couple of teams. They go to the Yankees, or they go to the Mariners. I mean, Shohei Ohtani, of course, went to the Angels. But typically, Philadelphia has never been a prime destination. I can't imagine like a top phenom over in Japan is thinking, oh, if I can only get to Philadelphia. You know, they're just, that's generally speaking, not the not the thought process. And so I think a Phillies team would have to really overpay a guy like Suzuki in order to get him here. And that's maybe one of the reasons why you don't hear him linked to the Phillies, even though, Liz, it sounds like from his profile, from what he did over in Japan, his skill set, he would be a really good fit in the Philadelphia outfield. He could probably play some center field, although he's more likely a corner outfielder. But given the Phillies' needs in the outfield, he sounds like he would be a really intriguing addition.
I mean, he'd be great. I think it would be awesome to have him on the team. It's just a shame that he's not coming. It's just not coming. Like, teams on the East Coast don't usually have a chance at these players, except unless you're the Yankees, because they are world famous for being good. Mm-hmm. They just don't want to settle there. It takes even longer for them to get home. It takes super much longer. You have to go across an entire country. And yeah, it's disappointing that the Phillies are never in on any of these deals, but I think it's just sort of a practicality. And I mean, what have the Angels and the Mariners really done with their additions?
No, they haven't done much, and that's true. And
I guess lately.
And I guess if you're going to go, like, I mean, I'm thinking like Hideki Matsui and Hideki Arabu? There's a couple other guys. They both went to the Yankees, but I guess, you know, you can go to the East Coast and fly all the way across the country if it's New York.
Yeah.
You know? And that's a little bit different, Justin. I mean, it's like, it's one thing to play on the East Coast if you're playing in Manhattan. It's a whole other thing to play, you know, on Broad Street. And that's not to besmirch Philadelphia or Broad Street or anything, but if you're a Japanese player and you're going to come all the way, you know, to America, and if you're going to play on the East Coast and have to, like Liz said, fly across the country and then fly over a huge body of water in order to get to and from your home, you're probably going to do New York rather than Philadelphia.
This is great because it actually puts pressure on whatever delegation the Phillies would, in this theoretical situation, send to really dazzle Seiya Suzuki about Philadelphia. I mean, you're building from the ground up an entire reputation of a place that has the loudest reputation in all of baseball and potentially sports. I mean, you have a chance to paint somebody's like understanding of Philadelphia in a whole new way. And it's not like the Phillies don't have an opening for a young phenom outfielder. That certainly, you know, that it's not that mm-hmm. that takes. It's not like there's somebody there that immediately takes them out of the running. So, you know, I do think on the one hand, yeah, that's something that could get them like in the conversation, or at least like one of the many teams that's trying, or at least rumored to be trying to do something here. But I also mm-hmm. think their priorities are completely not with Seiya Suzuki at this offseason. This is just not something that they're gonna, that I would be surprised if they wound up being a key player in this pursuit, because right now there's two teams, I believe, that are known to be linked to him, who are like known to be interested, and it is of course the Mariners, and the other one is the Giants, and then you have the Dodgers, Padres, Yankees, Rays, and Blue Jays, according to the Athletic article, that have also been expected to be in the mix. And one link they used was Billy Epler, who recruited Otani to come to Anaheim and mm-hmm. is now at the Mets. So potentially there's a Mets connection there, but if you haven't, if you're too good for Philadelphia, then I don't know. Yeah. Flushing is much better. but yeah, anyway,
it's New York, but you know,
I would love to see that. I feel like, look, if somebody wanted to come to the United States to play baseball, which obviously, you know, he does, it sounds like with this article, he is very enthusiastic about like coming to, he said the thing that'll, he's probably joking, but the thing that'll make him choose what team he plays for is which city has the best nachos. So like he's definitely like, you know, fun.
And a little entertaining, yeah.
So, you know, he wants to play baseball and he wants to have fun playing baseball. So if somebody was really like, okay, we want this guy, we want to do, like, somebody from the Phillies, like, we want to really try, then I think you could present a good enough argument, if you were really doing your best work, that the Philadelphia and that it's not New York and that you have to cross the country to get back home stuff isn't going to matter as much. Like, I think you could swing that. Like, yeah, it's a huge deal. But at the same time, yeah, if you want to, hey, if you're talking about your career and where you're going to play baseball and where you're going to be when you're playing baseball and the kind of city that you think you can have fun in, if you really wanted, say, a Suzuki to come to Philadelphia, you could set that up. Yeah, or you could at least get the Phillies in the running. But like I said, yeah, I don't think that's where their priorities are.
Yeah, it's probably not where their priorities are. And with a lot of this stuff, money does talk. I mean, so you could certainly...
Well, the Phillies don't have any of that, so...
No money, nothing like that going around. Last thing before we hit our first break here, I tweeted this out earlier this week. The Phillies, somebody online, and I gotta, you know, let me give credit where credit is due when it comes to the tweet, because it was a really really cool looking picture. It was at Smith Baiaid, at Smith Baiaid. I'm not sure how you would pronounce that, but he came up with an alternate jersey for the Phillies, a Phillies blue jersey, and it's different from the royal blue. I think it looks, it's almost kind of like how would you describe it? Like a sky blue almost. It's not powder. Like it's deeper and darker than the powder blue uniforms that they have. But it also, so it's a picture of Bryce Harper with the powder blue and red Phillies lettering across it, with the same color blue hat and a white P. And for whatever reason, I thought that color blue with the red looked really, really good. I thought it looked really, really sharp, and I would love to see the Phillies implement that as another alternate uniform. And I got a lot of positive hits on the tweet machine. So I know we wanted to talk about that a little bit. Pretty cool uniform, Justin. I think that if the Phillies are taking notes and they're looking for a change of pace, I really like that color scheme a lot.
What are we, a blue team now? It's just blue. The Phillies don't barely have any colors to their historical identity. They got red and then a different kind of red. And then also powder blue, which we all love. And now this is just blue. Look at the helmet. The Phillies P is white. That's just white and blue. There's no red in that. I'm not saying you got to depart from it, but from like a marketing, branding, aesthetic perspective, I feel like you want to bridge it from what your colors are now into any new colors. So, I don't know. If you're going to change up your colors that dramatically, can't you be a little more interesting about it? Again, if this was a real thing and not just somebody's Photoshop. Right. Yeah, I know. Everyone was pretty dazzled by this. But to me, it was like, yeah, he's just wearing a blue shirt. Looks like an away spring training jersey or something. But I do think that, you know, this being just like not related to anything real, but combined with Bryce Harper pretty much demanding that the Phillies wear their spring training uniforms when they're at away games sometimes this past season. Right. I do feel like they are getting some pressure to attempt new jerseys like this. If only just because then they can sell more jerseys, because I think a lot of people's closets have the home and away throwbacks from like the 80s and 90s, then the home and away current ones. And then, you know, it's time to think about what else we can put in people's closets and charge them a lot of money for. So, yeah. But to me, aesthetically, this one, I don't know, it's just blue. And like, oh, I hate to, I'm not mocking you, John, but like, do red, white, and blue go well together? Wow, that's incredible. What an original branding. I had no idea those colors were compliments to each other.
He is
no
mocking
offense.
You.
Yeah, it feels like it. I liked it. I thought it was cool.
You guys should like it. Like it. I'm not saying you're wrong for liking it.
No, you're saying I'm wrong for liking it, and that's fine.
That's true. I am saying that. You're wrong.
Yeah, you're saying I'm wrong. Liz, are you wrong too?
No, I'm right. It's a cerulean blue. I looked at different colored shades of blue, and this looks like a cerulean blue. I like it, and the reason why people like it is because it's bold. It's not red. It's not white. It's not cream. Do you want him to choose hot pink? What do you want?
Yes! Oh, it's bold. A blue baseball team.
It's
how
bold.
Wow, really stepping into new territory here.
It's bold within the very narrow strictures that these tight ass, sorry, these enormously conservative people, you know, will allow their uniforms to be. Like, this is as wild as it gets. It's dark. It's different. Phillies have used blue. It's been around. Why not just use it?
Yeah, they used it and the players got rid of it because they hated it. And they played poorly when they were wearing it.
It's a different blue. It's a totally different blue.
Oh,
it's totally different. Totally different blue. It's magnetic. It's darker than a powder blue. I mean, listen, what other colors are there that they can go to? I mean, are they going
to
do
green? I'd like to revisit the hot pink idea. Frankly,
hot pink.
But yeah, no. I mean, why not? I want them to incorporate the fanatic into the logo, onto like on a hat or something, and then yeah, that does open the door to a potential. You know, I'm not saying dominant color green, but you start involving that in your color scheme. I don't know, just something that not everybody else has done. Like switching from a red team to a blue team is like, I don't know. I mean, it's just like a blue team switching to a red team, just an on-off switch. You know, there are other options out there. I mean, we've talked about uniforms before. You know how much I'm like, I like that the Rockies went purple and that the Diamondbacks went like southwestern colors. Like, I think that's great.
Marlins had an orange once upon a time.
Oh man, the Marlins uniforms going from teal to that that other color scheme that was between this current one and that one. I mean, like I think it's great what the Marlins do with their uniforms. So
yeah, the problem is they've done that from the start of their existence. Like the Phillies have like 120 some odd years of being red, white, and blue. Yeah. Like I just don't know what other color you can throw into the mix now that's not going to look weird.
Like these and are their colors. These are their colors, and so. The direction that they haven't gone in for a while is this color blue, a darker, richer, more concentrated blue than the powder blues.
We just talked last week about on multiple podcasts about how the Phillies were once known as the Blue Jays. And it was this stupid little time that everyone ignores that the team even says that was not a formal thing. So we were never the Philadelphia Blue Jays. And you know what we talked about on the Dirty Inning was that. When that period was coming to an end, what Eddie Sawyer, the manager of the Phillies, said to the public relations director of the Phillies, let's get away from these defeatist uniforms we've been wearing. That stuff with the dark blue stripes, dark blue caps, and blue socks. Let's get a real fighting color, red. I want my boys to see red in a couple of ways every time they go on the field. Save the deep blue for the other clubs. And while we're at it, let's paint the clubhouse in a pastel shade of some sort just by way of contrast. Just to be different. I'm not saying red is a super different color either, but at least it's the Phillies color. I know they mix some blue in there, and blue has and hasn't played more dominant roles, and I love the powder blues like everybody. But I just don't see this. If they were going to make a real change, make a change to a color that maybe isn't used everywhere, and make a change to a color that people on your own team, from the 93 era guys who got rid of those hats because they played poorly in them, to Eddie Sawyer being like, this color sucks, let's see red.
How about we go black?
Let's do it. Let's just full blackout uniforms.
When did Eddie Sawyer say that? That was what, 1950? How old do you think he was around then?
I don't know, 110.
I'm just saying, yeah. Because it's 1950, it's possible that this man who hates blue uniforms speaks for me. It's possible this man was born in the 1800s and did not have electricity growing up. So I just want to make the point that I don't understand why we're like, why are we choosing to choose this man's words? Because he doesn't like the blue stuff back in 1950.
Because it feeds into my argument, Liz. That's why I'm because I cherry picked it because it makes me sound better. And you know what else? He's staring down the communist menace in Soviet Union, knowing the color red has never been more controversial in the United States. And he's saying, that's mine. I'm ready to take this system on and bring the whole thing down on its head.
Should be noted that, yes, the year the Phillies dropped the Blue Jays, they went to the World Series as the Whiz Kids and then didn't appear in the World playoffs again for 27 years after that. So,
great
yeah,
job.
And what color team broke their hearts in 1993? What color were they wearing?
They were wearing, yes, they were the Blue Jays. You're right. That's right. Well, we've come full circle, I suppose. I don't really know where to go with it from here, so this is a good time for us to take our break, and when we come back, we'll get into the Athletic Phillies fan survey, and we'll quickly hit on some of these questions and give you our thoughts on them as well. So we'll do that coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So this week, the Athletic put out a survey to Phillies fans, and I was looking through it, and I participated in it, and I thought it was an interesting survey because it's got a lot of really fun questions to answer, and I had to really ask myself how I felt about this team, especially because it's not a finished team yet. It's an incomplete team. They still have lots of holes. There's lots of work to do when the lockout is over, so it's hard to say exactly how confident I will feel in this team once the offseason is over and how I will feel about their prospects and their chances in 2022, but we're going to go over some of the questions here. We did this last week with another survey. Was it an Athletic survey when we did it last week too? Only it was
yes.
Major League Baseball? Okay. So the Athletic is in Surveyville right now, and we are totally, totally riffing on the content, so it's fantastic. Thank you. The first question they asked, and it's probably the simplest question, but one that's the hardest to pin down, maybe for the reasons I just mentioned, is how confident are you in the direction the Phillies, how confident are you that the Phillies are headed in the right direction? So it's on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being not confident at all, 5 being very confident. Liz, I'll start with you. Are you 1 not confident at all to 5 very confident? Where are you on confidence in the Phillies' direction?
I cheated and I put 3. I have 3 down here because like it varies from day to day and sometimes moment to moment. How I feel about the Phillies. Sometimes I'm like, yes, this is happening. They want to win. And other times I'm like, why are we here? why am I choosing to subject myself to this team that clearly does not want to win? So I decided to split the difference.
And Justin, I'm going to ask you this question too, but let me ask the second question as the follow-up. Just it'll make more sense that way. How does that compare to how you felt at this time last year? Your options are, I'm significantly more confident now, I'm mildly more confident now, I feel about the same, a little less confident, or a lot less confident.
I am mildly more confident.
Really?
Okay. I mean, in that I am in any way confident. And that there is, I can entertain the idea of confidence as opposed to last year. Actually, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm a little less confident because I thought things might happen. Like, I can't even remember mm-hmm. to last year. Were we excited that things might happen, or were we really conscious that Dombrowski was probably going to have to take, you know, a gap year?
We weren't. I think that conversation happened and then it faded away, and then it kind of came back closer to the end of the season because there was some kind of reference to Dombrowski just having like an observational year. And they never kind of straight up said that, because I guess why would they? But it was just us kind of slowly going insane. So it kind of became very difficult to gauge the direction the Phillies were in last year at this point. So, yeah, I feel like the Dombrowski thing was their like big acquisition, and we were all supposed to just understand what that means. But then he didn't do any of that Dave Dombrowski stuff because he apparently just was never going to for that first full season. But that's what I mean when I say it's exciting that all these non on the field things, but behind closed doors and office jobs mm-hmm. and director jobs are getting filled, because they're at least getting filled with the guy who is the aggressive and Hall of Fame president of baseball ops, who is with the Phillies now. They're all people he wants in there. And if his system gets put in place, then there is reasons to be more confident. Like, I know there's always the little asterisk of like, it's the Phillies, it's Philadelphia, I'm hopeless, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, like we feel that way all the time. But right now, just to answer the questions without John asking me them, I would, if I could put it between 2 and 3, I would do that, but I think I'm gonna lean 3, because just based on the things I've said for the past few weeks, I think there is a little more confidence in me, just because there's something happening. We're not kind of sitting around wondering what the plan is. We're not sitting around wondering what the direction is. We're deciding, even with this question, whether or not it's the right direction. So clearly there's consensus that they've chosen one, and that alone builds a little confidence, considering it's also, you know, it's Dombrowski. And a year from now, if we hate Dombrowski as much as we hated Andy McPhail, then, you know, we were wrong. But right now I can say that I'm a 3 in Philly's confidence. And I will say I'm mildly more confident now, because I was very down on this team for a while, for a lot of reasons. And some of those reasons will creep back into play once the team, you know, is playing again, is being the Phillies again. And like off the field stuff continues to seep into our consciousness. But like, you know, right now I'd say, as far as the organization goes, I'm a 3 confidence level. And I think that's mildly more than last year.
I would say that I'm at a 3 as well. I feel like they're still going to get some stuff done here this offseason, but I'm sure they're not going over the luxury tax. And because I'm feeling pretty sure about that, I do feel like we're going to go into the season with kind of the same kind of holes that we had the year before. Last year, I mean, Dombrowski came in, and I think I feel about the same level of confidence, because I know we were not confident at all until they signed JT Realmuto. And until they signed Didi Gregorius, and we thought those were great signings. We thought those were, and Realmuto certainly, you know.
You're right. No, you're totally right. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, but I mean, for most of the offseason, it didn't feel that way.
No, I'm agreeing with you. That's what unlocked, I think, any kind of confidence we have was unlocked by those two moves. Yeah.
Right. And so we saw Dombrowski. Oh, okay. They're actually paying these guys, and you know, he's making some moves to try and win in 2021. So I feel more confident. So I feel about the same as last year right now, because I know there's more moves coming, but I know that they're not just going to go out and fill all the holes. So there's going to be a lot of finger crossing, a lot of, you know, question marks and things that have to go right in order for the Phillies to succeed in 2021. But that question also kind of is asking us to look a little bit longer than just at the 2022 season. It's the direction of the franchise as a whole. And until we see Preston Mattingly and what some of these other front office hires are actually able to accomplish in terms of producing good young talent, I can't get that excited just yet. I'm happy they're making changes, But they've made changes in the last few years, and changes that didn't work. So I just need to see some results before my confidence level moves up a whole lot.
I'd like to add that mildly more confident is the ceiling to my potential confidence increase in general, because this team mm-hmm. does not, like you're saying, does not deserve a whole lot of confidence, because you know it's been a lot of talk, it's been a lot of letdowns. And it's been a lot of nothing a lot of the time. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think they particularly deserve a lot of confidence. And I think a proper time to check back in, certainly with me being mildly more confident, is after the center and left field jobs have been filled. And after that, my confidence level will be adjusted based on who is filling those jobs, in the same way that I think Real Muto and Gregorius getting signed were the unlocking of our confidence last year.
Yeah. Yeah. There's going to be a couple of acquisitions where you're going to get a real sense of what this team's going to be in 22.
How seriously they're taking baseball in 2022,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. All right, the next one. I'm going to kind of skip around here a little bit. How would you rate Joe Girardi's performance as manager since he was hired before the 2020 season? Liz, let me pose this one to you first. One, on a scale of 1 to 5, again, 1 being poor, 5 being excellent.
That's a 1. That's just a straight up 1. No.
Remember when we said he would be worth like 5 to 10 wins more than Gabe Kapler as manager? I think we said 5. And it just doesn't feel like that was that's something that's
that is definitely not something that's happened at all. No.
Maybe baseball's working normally right now, and we three were just told there was a labor stoppage so that we would stop talking about it.
Because, that's probably
true. Because we missed so hard on that.
Woof.
We whiffed so hard. Woof. Oh my gosh. Justin, how about you between 1 and 5?
I'm trying not to operate exclusively in extremes. I'll go 2. It's not that I can pull offhand any moments where somebody was like, good job, Joe Girardi. And it's not like I can think offhandedly of any particular strengths of his. He never showed up in a Yankees uniform, so I guess that's a plus. So that's what gets him into 2 territory.
He at least knows where he works. And what year
Justin,
it is.
Have a take, man. A 2. No, I'm with you. I'm at a 2 as well. You know, just because I feel like it could be worse, but not much.
Right.
And I feel like I feel like Girardi has the chance to be a good manager if he's got some slightly better players and bullpen arms, but he also has not helped himself.
Ever. Right. If he's got a team full of all-stars, hell, he'll take them all the way to a World Series.
I will say this, too. Joe Girardi has been the manager of this team during the 2020 pandemic and last year when they were just kind of coming out of it. As the Phillies, as we've talked about, were kind of in it was like a wait and see year. So I think this is the year where we ultimately will know if Joe Girardi is going to be the manager kind of moving forward.
Literally. And yeah. It's just...
Yeah. Because this is last year of his deal.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. All right, next one. How confident are you in ownership led by managing partner John Middleton? Justin, on a scale of 1 to 5.
That one I will say a 1. I'm just completely, at this point, the best thing for Middleton to do, I think, would be to not be a decision maker, not be leading.
Yep.
Perhaps just, you know, sit off to the side and leaf through all the whatever money's in his wallet. But yeah, I've been completely discouraged by that. I don't know. I was probably just as excited as everybody to see like this new owner emerge and, you know, make all these big statements and quotable statements. And we all know what they were. But I really feel like he's like a kicked dog at this point, and he's just more concerned with being an owner than the owner of the Phillies. So, yeah, my confidence in him is I'd rather him just not be a part of the equation.
Liz, how about you? Are you a 1 also?
Yeah, I don't know how I could say anything but 1. It would be best for the Phillies for him to never speak in public ever again.
What would make this go up for me, because I'm at a 1 also, is if they go over
luxury
the luxury
tax.
That's it.
Yep.
That's the big thing.
Show me you want to win, John.
Yeah. Stop talking about the luxury tax. And well, now we've taken a break so you can try to raise or lower the luxury. What do the owners want to do?
They want to keep it low.
They want to keep it low. Okay.
Which I think flies in the face of what John Middleton wants to do. I think John Middleton is an owner who wouldn't mind seeing that thing go way up. Just, you know, I think he's concerned about the penalties and the tax and going over. I think he would spend $240 million on the roster if they weren't going to get penalized for it. But
I'm not sure that's true.
Maybe I'm wrong about that.
I don't know if that's true. The luxury tax is in place to prevent them from spending too much money, essentially, because the penalties really aren't that big. LA has paid them for several years now. Like, and they're not big the first couple of times. Like, if you're building a roster that's going to consistently be over the luxury tax, like he needs to go for it. And the threshold wouldn't stop him if he really wanted to do it, because the penalties really aren't that big. And I think you could tell that he doesn't want to do it because he's probably not going to, and we'll see him not do it.
John, I do think that's a valid point, but yeah, just the vibes and the impression I get from him, from the things he said and the things he's done, yeah, and more importantly, the things he hasn't done. I think he doesn't want to be a Steve Cohen. He wants to be like a guy in a top hat and a ticker tape parade. He wants to be like that.
He wants to be the Monopoly guy.
Right. He wants to be beloved, but he doesn't want to do the thing he needs to do to be beloved.
Well, he has the chance to rewrite that narrative if he wants to anytime. And so as Phillies fans with a rooting for a team that's got a lot of holes, we're hoping he does that. Just a few more here. What is the team's biggest need whenever the lockout ends? Justin, I'll start with you on this. Bullpen, center field, left field, rotation, shortstop, or other?
Well, I think there's multiple right answers here, but the one I'm realizing that I've focused on entirely is center field. Yeah. I really latched on to the Brian Reynolds idea, even the Cedric Mullins idea. These are two things I do not think are likely. And, you know, the more I've been reading and talking about and just looking into Mick Abel, you know, the more it does feel like, yeah, you know, this is a guy who is maybe not worth trading even for your center fielder of the future. But then, you know, I wake up the next day and I'm like, yeah, but then you have a center fielder for the future who is a five tool player. That's very good to have, too. Yeah. I feel like center field, because it's an area where the Phillies have been, in some cases, just utterly absent. They just did not have a center fielder. I'm not sure there are 30 like true center fielders who should be starting center fielders in baseball right now. So I feel like if the Phillies were able to get one of them and have one of them, that takes a lot of that answers more than one issue. That answers more than the question, who's going to play center field? Who's going to go stand next to Bryce? It's like, oh, who is a potential leadoff hitter? Who's a potential speed threat? Who's potentially going to give us more stolen bases? Who's potentially going to give us more runs scored? Who's potentially going to be a better guy to have on base in front of Bryce, in front of Reese, in front of JT? So I feel like that answers a lot of questions depending on who it is, and which is why, like, Kevin Kiermaier, great. He checks a couple boxes, but he's nowhere near what some of these fantasies I've concocted would accomplish just being the center fielder. So for me, that's their biggest need.
Right. And there's a trade simulator out there. Scott Lauber noted it in a story, and he got me hooked on it for a couple of days. And I know it's not popular among some Phillies fans who are particularly protectful of prospects, but the kind of deal you would need to swing for a Brian Reynolds or a Cedric Mullins is pretty astronomical. So it's unlikely, but I'm with you, Justin. I think for me, it's center field. I think it's the biggest need. Unfortunately, in free agency and really in trade too, a realistic trade that I think the Phillies would actually try to pull off, the answer, quote unquote, the answer doesn't really seem to be an option out there anywhere. Liz, how about you? What's the team's biggest need whenever the lockout ends?
I was going to be, you know, I'll just choose something else like bullpen, but I can't even pretend, because it's definitely center field. They need that's the thing. The Phillies need not just a good hitter, but they need someone who's good at, you know, actually defensively. Mm-hmm. And,
yeah,
you know, that solves two problems in one person. And it was such a huge void, just a giant hole. Like, it is sort of like no one was out there at times because there was nothing happening at the plate. And it's like he literally wasn't on the field. The balls were just flying past.
Do we really feel like they included shortstop on this list? I'm not saying the Phillies don't need a shortstop. I'm more saying, don't we feel like the Phillies consider that box more, like, at least the person who's going to play that role is already within the organization for them in 2022? Like, I don't even know if they consider that a need. They're certainly not going to go out and sign Trevor Story. I don't think they're going to sign Trevor Story. So, you know, or anybody from that shortstop class. So to me, I'm not even sure they would consider that a need. That's more just like squeeze whatever we can get out of DD, try to hope Bryson Stott pays off. They got a couple of depth guys who could, you know, play shortstop, you know, professionally. But yeah, I don't know if the Phillies really consider that on their list.
All right, we'll do a couple more here before we wrap. There's a ton of them on this list, so if you want to take part in the survey, go to The Athletic and do it, because it's pretty fun. We don't have time to go through all of these different things. I was going to ask, which free agent or trade candidate would you most like to see the Phillies acquire? But since we're talking about center field so much, Brian Reynolds being listed on here, I think we would all say Brian Reynolds would be the guy we would want them to go after.
Actually, I have Chris Bryant, because you could theoretically plug him in at center field. And he, you know, he's a flexible player. I think you could put him a lot. He's the type of player the Phillies have been looking for. A guy who could do outfield and infield, theoretically.
Yeah.
So I would love for him, and all he would cost is money.
These aren't going to be things that happened, but just as a thought exercise, we're disregarding the Phillies being in on any of these shortstops, and we're saying even one of these young center fielders is probably off the table. But if the Phillies were, like, just literally were doing a fan poll to see which one of these deals they would make, would you rather them trade for Brian Reynolds or sign Trevor Story if they only were going to do one?
Well, I would sign Carlos Correa.
Oh, right. He's on there, too.
Yeah.
If I had my choice of shortstops, it would be to sign Carlos
Correa. Yeah, I would put Correa over Story as well. That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Yeah.
But I still think I might trade for Brian. But yeah, you're right. I mean, if it's just a matter of getting the player, I want Brian Reynolds. But with Correa, all you got to do is sign him. You don't have to give up any prospects. So I'm probably picking Carlos Correa as I think about it, because for the very reason you just said, it's not a trade. You can just sign him.
Yeah. And those are both, I think, you know, I could make both of those answers as well. Just to be a variable, I'll throw Kyle Schwarber in there, because him playing left field, I think would also be a boon for the Phillies. I mean, there's your big bat. There's a guy who can contribute. Yeah, he's not a great defender, but that's the whole point of having a five-tool center fielder, is taking pressure off the guy who's out there, because his bat's the size of a tree. So, yeah, I also would see a lot of value in a Kyle Schwarber.
All right, let's do a couple of these rapid fire here. Will Bryce Harper win another MVP award before his current contract expires after the 2031 season? Liz, yes or no?
I say yes.
Justin.
I'll say yes, too.
Yeah, I'll say yes. Why not? What should the Phillies do with Rhys Hoskins? This probably should be a longer podcast topic for us, and maybe we'll knock this one out next week. But the three options: negotiate a contract extension now before he reaches free agency, which is 2 years away, trade him to fill another need on the big league roster, or nothing, he's fine where he is. Liz.
This is what I didn't fill out because I didn't know what to do. I don't know.
Okay, well, you know what? Let's hold off on this one, Justin. We'll hold off on this one, and let's take a week to think about it, because he was in the conversation in Philly's Twitterland this week, because Jim Salisbury for NBC Sports Philadelphia said that intimated that there might not be enough money for Rhys Hoskins at some point. So I think we should come back and talk about that next week, rather than just do a drive-by on it. All right, a couple others. What is your level of confidence in Aaron Nola bouncing back in 2022? Again, a range of 1 to 5, 1 being not confident, 5 being very confident. Justin?
I'll say 4. I think he can do it. I've had enough time to separate myself from that season, and I think we know he's an all-star pitcher. We know he's a good pitcher. We know he can be a frontline pitcher. I feel like there's been enough scrutiny on him because of 2021, him specifically, and him, you know, in some circles being blamed as one of the main reasons why they weren't as successful as they could have been in 2021. So I feel like that's going to start registering itself, manifesting as progress here. And I think you see a stronger Aaron Nola in 2022.
Liz, how about you?
I'm the opposite. I'm at a 2. I'm not letting him hurt me again.
Oh, man.
Sorry.
I'm going to say 5. I'm very confident, I think, that he'll bounce back here in 2022. I don't know that we'll get 2018 Aaron Nola, but I think we're going to get a very good pitcher in 2022. Yeah.
And he doesn't have to be now, which is he doesn't have to be the best pitcher on the team.
Right. Here's one that they didn't ask. What is your level of confidence that Zach Wheeler can duplicate his 2021 season in 2022?
I'm a 4 on that one.
I'll go 3. That was a very good season.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Yeah, I'll probably lean towards 3. I feel okay about the possibility. It was just he was Jacob deGrom last year.
Yeah.
As I think it was a Baseball Prospectus article, kind of, or maybe it was Fangraphs.
No,
I forget which one.
Baseball Prospectus. Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's do this last one. What is your level of confidence in Alec Bohm being the long-term answer at third base? 1 being not confident, 5 being very confident. Liz?
I'm currently hanging out in the 1 to 2 area.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Justin?
Yeah, you know what? I have a hard time figuring out what I think about Alec Bohm. No, you know what? I'm going to say long-term answer at third base. Oh, boy. Because it's like the difference between, oh, is he like this year going to look better than last year? But that's not what the question is. The question is, is he the long-term answer? And you know what? I'll say yes. I'll give him a five because I don't think he's got to be Mike Schmidt out there. I think he's got to be more of a Jason Wirth kind of role. And I think he's capable of that. I think even in this year where he went through so much and he looked so bad at times, he came back and he was driving the ball again. He was hitting the ball hard. He was hitting line drives. He was getting on base. He was hitting over 300 for a stretch in the second half of the season. So I think he was already starting to bounce back. And I think the Phillies have some help in-house that's there specifically to work with him. And I think since they said out loud in public, this guy's, you know, we're sticking with him at third base. I think they know that there's more potential to be unlocked there. So I'm gonna go five.
I'm gonna say a two. Just I think the offense will come around. Although I'm really waiting for him to see those power numbers come up a little bit. For such a big guy, he really should be hitting a few more balls out of the yard. I don't need him to hit 30, but if he can be a 20 homer guy, that would be awesome. The thing is the defense. I worry the defense is just never going to get a whole lot better. I don't need him, like you said, he doesn't need to be Schmidt. He doesn't even need to be Pedro Feliz down there at third base. But he's got to not be a butcher over at third base either. And unfortunately, that's what he was for much of last season. Now, how much of that got into his head and it was mental, who knows? But maybe these coaches, maybe this coaching staff is working with him. And well, we know they are working with him, but maybe it's having an effect and he will be better defensively. But it seems to me, I think the Phillies, they're going to try him at third base again this year, and if he's not good defensively, they're going to move him off at third base and do something else with him. What that is, I don't have any idea. But
I would take a Dave Hollins out there, but hey, this kind of feeds into the Rhys Hoskins argument because, you know,
yes, it does.
Talk about retaining Rhys Hoskins. Like, don't we have like a bunch of first basemen just hanging around this team right now? Like
a bunch of current or future first basemen kind of lurking around right now with Real Muto probably going to see less time behind the dish this year as well. All right, that's all the time we've got for this survey. But again, go to the Athletic and take part in the survey. It's really a lot of fun. Time for some final thoughts, Justin. Final thought from you before we wrap up.
This is the general state of baseball fandom right now. I mean, because of the labor stoppage, I think when there is a baseball conversation, it usually surfaces because there's a bad guy for the day. And I thought it was funny right before we started recording that I think John Boy got nailed as today's evening PM bad guy for just tweeting something that said, like, it was as mild as going like the league and the players are at fault here, and people were like, well, hang on.
Like both sides in the lockout. Like get away from me. Get away.
I mean, like
from
he's he's wrong, but like it was also just a very mild, soft comment. But everybody got jumped like immediately.
Twitter is a place, man. I'll tell you what, it is a place. That's Heyman you're talking about, right? Not Morosi.
No, it was John Boy of John Boy.
Oh, the SB Nation guy. Okay, gotcha. Gotcha. I thought you said John Boy, and you were talking about John Heyman. Like, oh, what are John Boy saying? What are you saying again?
No, talking about the guy that did those. What, the lip reading? Is that what he used to do? The bad lip reading.
Those are great.
JOM, not John Boy. Not John Boy.
Oh,
okay. SB
Nation. The guy. Yes. The Yankees guy.
Yes.
Who does all the videos. Yes. I gotcha. Yeah, he's jumped the shark. That guy.
He has. Yeah. That's a good way to put
it. It's too much now. It's too much John Boy. It's too much. All right, Liz, final thought from you.
I was going to mention that as well. So Justin took my. I'm trying to think if I have anything else to say. I don't. I'm done.
All right. Tell them. Well, that's fair enough.
On continued success this week, we're going to talk about Mark Leiter Jr. and Mitch
Walton. Oh, yes. Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Aren't you that's super glad that I told you to put pictures in there?
Oh gosh,
I'm loving it every day. Thank you, Liz.
It's all we've done for the past couple of weeks.
It's great. It's been great stuff. It's truly for Phillies fans who are waiting for news to happen. If you can't get actual news, then you want to talk about Mark Leiter Jr.
Always.
And really dive into the career of Mark Leiter Jr. But it's going to be a lot of fun. You guys always dig up a bunch of fun stuff on these guys. So make sure you check out the latest Continued Success coming out later this week. And as for Hittin' Season, folks, that's going to do it for this episode. My thanks to Justin and Liz for once again joining me. Don't forget to check out the Hittin' Season Patreon. Going over to patreon.com/Hittin' Season. Find all the stuff we got going on there. And tell your friends about the Good Fight Podcast feed. We're at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. If you're on Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star rating and a review. Let us know what you think of the show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.